Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 101. My name is John. Well, I cannot claim this advice is my own. I learned it in the gutter one night crawling home. Last episode, after 8+ years, I finally got around to talking about myself, including mentioning my last name for the first time in this series. It's Nolan, by the way. I had mentioned pieces of my life in previous podcasts whenever it gave personal insight on a topic, but last month was the first time all of those things came together in one place. If I accomplished what I was trying to last episode, you should understand that I'm just a guy with a voice choosing a simple way to express his thoughts and feelings about the world around me. I'm not a devil. I'm not a saint. I'm dumb enough to have made some really bad and obvious mistakes in my life, but I'm also smart enough to have learned from most of them, and wise enough to realize that even those mistakes set me on paths that led me to where I am now. And when I look into my wife's eyes, I know that where I am now is my best destiny. As I said last episode, I'm nobody. I'm not a celebrated mechanical engineer like Bill Nye. I'm not a famous movie star like Clint Eastwood. I'm not rich like Donald Trump. I'm not a charismatic speaker like Barack Obama. When people like those speak, their respective disciples in the cult of personality listen. That's not the pulpit for me. And that's okay. I've seen more than ample evidence to know that the liberal narrative presented to the masses is rife with errors and lies. I've also seen more than ample evidence that the conservative narrative presented to the masses is rife with errors and lies. With my life experiences, I've adopted some guidelines that shape my point of view and my opinions, and this will likely grow and change as I experience more. I like to look at things from different perspectives because you never know what you're going to find. This means oftentimes, things that are considered good by the masses vex me. Why? Well, as I said in the past, one man's evolution is another man's entropy. Collectivists believe their plans will benefit mankind, and the masses usually go along with them. While individualists believe those same plans impede and destroy us. Whenever someone tells me, "Don't sweat the small stuff," I reply, "The devil is in the details." Because the ones who tell you not to sweat the small stuff are the ones who hide the devil in the details. No matter how trustworthy someone seems to be, it's always good to check the fine print. The more popular something is, the less likely I am to want to participate, unless it's something I already had an interest in. For instance, Harry Potter movies. Couldn't care less. Never saw any of them, and I have no interest in seeing them. Comic book movies are different, because I grew up loving superheroes. Even Marvel movies will pique my interest, even though I'm loyal to DC. By that same token, the more trendy the latest cause and concern amongst the compassionistas, the more scrutiny I give it. In this context, compassionista is a person who so strongly believes in their cause that they are willing to force you to go along with them. In other words, pretty much every collectivist I've been warning about for the past 8 years. The easiest way to spot compassionistas is their walk doesn't match their talk. I've used this example many times before. But when you have a group of people who viciously insist that we all must accept their sermon of man-made global warming, but they then take dozens of private jets to remote Pacific islands to talk about it, or who are the biggest energy user in their area and don't bother to go green until they are called out in the media, or who blacklist anybody who presents proof that any aspect of their theories is incorrect, then I'm not going to sacrifice my freedom at their socialist altar. All I care about, philosophically speaking, is the truth. I think I get that from my mom. She would tell me about the trouble that she would get into with her dad when she questioned what she was taught in church. That's also why I eventually left religion completely. Scrutinize the holy men and you'll find out real quick which ones are legitimate. I don't trust the priests and the preachers. I don't trust scientists either. Please note, I said I don't trust scientists. I trust science, not scientists. I don't trust scientists for the same reason I don't trust the priests or the preachers. There are scientific laws and there are scientific theories. Theories are ideas not proven. And for me, believing in an unproven theory is no different than believing in religion. Now, you may have data that supports your theory, but it is a sad part of human nature that we like to spin data to fit our bias. We love to take facts and figures and present them in a non-factual way. I've been getting in deep with scientific theories, so let me switch to a mathematical example on spinning data. 65,853,514 people voted for Hillary Clinton in the last presidential election, which gave her 48.02% of the popular vote. The argument from leftists becomes, Hillary Clinton is preferred by 48% of the American people. After all, she won the popular vote. But wait, there were approximately 235,248,000 people of voting age in the United States in 2016. Only about half of them voted. That doesn't even include minors who are aware of the American political landscape but are not yet eligible to vote. So all the leftists can truly say is Hillary Clinton is preferred by approximately 28% of the voting age public. So you even have to be skeptical of how the numbers are presented. The numbers don't lie, but the people presenting the numbers do. And that's why I don't trust scientists or priests or preachers. False piety annoys me. You want to tell me what you believe? Fine. You want to stand your ground and not budge as we debate? Fine. You claim that you are morally superior to me because I don't fall into goose-step with your beliefs? Go fuck yourself. I've got an upcoming episode in the works, and I'm going to talk more about this, but I've stated so many times in the history of this podcast that I've lost count. You believe what you want, but don't try to force me to conform to your beliefs, and vice versa. You want to completely turn me off to your beliefs? You want me to walk away and have nothing to do with you as a person or as an ideology? All you have to do is come at me with sanctimonious vitriol, and I want nothing to do with you. Case in point, and yes, I know I've talked about this in the podcast before. The day after Trump got elected, an actor whose work I admired and respected sent out a tweet about how horrible it would be to have his taxes cut. So I'm thinking to myself as I read it, hell, if you get a tax cut, then you get more of the money you earned in your pocket. And you can spend it on whatever cause you believe in, rather than leaving it in the hands of a government that will be led by a person who you openly hate. I reply to the tweet. You make it seem like your only options are either to give it to the government or do nothing. This was back when Twitter only allowed 140 characters. I didn't have much to work with. But he didn't like that. Not one bit. He assumed I was attacking him, and he went off. I immediately apologized and tried to steer it back to civility. But he didn't want that either. He told me I had to think about what I said and come to him in the proper manner. Come to you in the proper manner? I don't kiss the ring, pal. And then there's this supercilious showmanship. Recently, a bunch of celebrities got together to protest the separation of families trying to enter the United States by ways not permitted under current immigration law. Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to try to crucify me for that. Their protest involved fasting. You know, like a hunger strike. They didn't all fast at the same time, though. One person would fast for 24 hours and then pass it off to somebody else. I only know of one celebrity who put it up on her Twitter feed that she was next in line, and I neither know nor care who else was involved. Hey, remember when Gandhi saw injustice and he would fast for like a day and then hand it off to one of his buddies so he could get back to eating? Tell me, how great is it to have this modern day example of these amazing Hollywood celebrities to take us to the next level of enlightenment? Ugh, what a load of elitist crap. You skip craft services for a day and you think that matters? Gandhi went as long as 21 days with his fasting protests. When you smug snobs make it one third of that time and are in bed weak and emaciated pleading for people to change, then I'll consider your cause. Until then, I'll pass on the flea circus. Meanwhile, other celebrities are asking for donations to raise money to help the would-be immigrants. Now, don't misunderstand. I wholeheartedly believe in giving money to causes you believe in. Money is the representation of your work. So if you make $20 an hour and you donate $100, that means you worked for 5 hours for your cause. And that is noble, no matter what people say. So bravo to those people for trying to do something productive to make a difference. However, if you follow through to the logical conclusion of the proclaimed morality from those fasting elitists, if they really cared, wouldn't they be opening their homes, sponsoring the immigrants, and helping them acclimate into American society? It's not about you acting on your morality in the United States these days. It's forcing others to take action on your morality so you don't have to. You know, like the community organizer who tells us we all need to sacrifice more to advance his socialist goals. I'm sorry. We need to sacrifice more to help others. But before he and his wife came into the national spotlight, they were barely giving 1.5% of their $300,000 income to charity. Ooh, what humanitarians sacrificing for others. If you believe in something, you should support it. And if your idea is good, then others will voluntarily follow. Once you force others to do things you think are moral, no matter how good your idea is, you become an agent of evil. That leads me into the libertarian philosophy. This is where my life has taken me after I abandoned conservatism. Libertarians embrace natural law and natural rights. They haven't been easy concepts for me to explain. I've read through essays and quotes from others. I even had some I was going to read you, but I cut them out of the podcast because they were so dry and boring, I could barely follow them. I'm no great philosopher, but let me take a stab at it. You wake up tomorrow, and there is no more government. No federal, no state, no local government. Not even so much as a homeowners association. What can you do that does not involve the theft, vandalization, or destruction of another's property, or the initiation of force against another person? Those are natural rights. What if you aren't initiating the force? What if someone else initiates the force? What if somebody else threatens your life or your property? You absolutely have the right to protect yourself from any threat. You also have the right to prepare against any threat you perceive. That is why you have the right to own weapons, even the kinds of weapons other people fear. Again, the rules are no theft, vandalization, or destruction of another person's property. No initiation of force against another person. Those are natural rights. There's all kinds of things you can do on your own under those simple rules. You want to smoke a joint? Natural right. You want to eat food cooked in trans fats? Natural right. Want to worship Cthulhu, the high priest of the great old ones? Natural right. You want to publish a podcast? Natural right. Why? Because you are doing all these things by yourself. Believing what you want, saying what you want, and doing with your own body as you please. That's not the extent of your natural rights as an individual, but it's a damn good start. What if it's more than one person? Here's the rule. All personal interactions must be voluntary and consensual. And for the purposes of this discussion, I'm talking about interactions between adults. Got it? Good. Example number one. I get a message from a guy on Grindr. For the uninitiated, Grindr is a hookup app for gay and bisexual men. We chat. We get to know each other, and after a while, he writes to me saying he wants me to go over to his place and have sex with him. I agree. So I go over to his place, and we have hot, sticky, gay sex. That's a natural right. Voluntary and consensual agreement between people. The rule applies no matter how many people or combination of genders are involved. No one outside the agreement has any right to become involved to change the dynamic in any way. if at any point one of the persons says he or she is no longer willing to have sex or cannot give proper consent and sex happens anyway, then it becomes rape. No longer voluntary or consensual, it becomes a violation of rights and a crime. This is the point where an outside force needs to become involved. Example number two. A person needs a task done, but cannot or does not want to do it themselves. So they decide to hire someone else to do the task. A person who wants to work offers to do the task. The two get together and agree on the compensation for the work. The task is done, and the worker gets paid the agreed compensation. This is a natural right. Voluntary, consensual agreement. No one outside of the agreement has any right to interfere. It doesn't matter what the task is. Assuming it doesn't violate other people's natural right, you can't hire someone to beat up somebody else. Or what the amount of compensation is. No one else has the right to force any change in the agreement. To take the labor without the payment is slavery. To take the payment without the labor is theft. If either party violates the terms of the agreement, then an outside force may need to become involved. All human interaction must be voluntary. You cannot force people to interact if they don't want to. You cannot prevent people from interacting if they do want to. In other words, you can't prevent gay people from getting married, nor can you force someone to bake their wedding cake. I know what's best for me. I don't know what's best for you. You know what's best for you. You don't know what's best for me. That's why, in this podcast, I'll tell you what I think. I'll opine on how a nation that purports to be free should have a limited government that doesn't tell you how to live your life. I'll point out the hypocrisies of the two major political parties in America and their sycophants. Occasionally, angrily saying things that aren't quite constructive, but are personally cathartic. I'll give my opinion on what I believe are the best way to live a life of freedom. But what I will not do is tell you how to live your life. Nor will I ever support any legislation that forces the morality of one person or group onto another. I'm figuring out what path I want to take. You have to figure out yours. And I'll keep expressing my beliefs, sharing my path, just in case anybody else thinks it's a good idea and wants to walk it with me. But the pragmatist in me doesn't expect a crowd. I mentioned in the previous episode how podcast number 90 was a personal favorite. The title of that episode was Not C. That was meant to have a double meaning. First, if you say it out loud, it's a homophone. Not C. Not C. Because that episode was a foray into Hitler's Nazi party. But also because today's American public does not see how this country has blindly embraced the ideals of the Nazi Party platform. I said it before, and I'll say it again. If you properly conceal the nefarious and atrocious aspects of the Nazi Party and presented it to the American people as a legitimate plan for the nation, I guarantee you, you will get at least 65 million votes. If you get a charismatic enough candidate, it would be a landslide of epic proportions. And I'm not talking about Trump supporters voting for this either. I mean, that is the narrative these days, isn't it? Republicans are the Nazis. Most Americans don't know the details and nuances of the Nazi Party platform because our public education is rigged against learning and reasoning while designed to promote propaganda, homogeny, and compliance. We know the Holocaust. We don't know the populist ideals that led to it. If you look at what the National Socialist Party of Germany stood for back in the day, about 80% of that is currently in the Democrat Party platform in our country. And the other 20% is in the Republican Party platform. Oh, so they share some of the platform, you say. What's the big deal, you say? The whole point of Nazi propaganda was to demonize and dehumanize particular groups of people and blame them for the country's misfortunes. In other words, create some scapegoats. Craftily conceal your socialist endgame to get the people to buy into your platform. Couple that with some bad guys to blame, and you have everything you need to mentally and emotionally enslave a nation. The agenda is in place, and the sheep accept it. All they need now are the scapegoats. Now, you can look at it from one side and say Hitler created scapegoats out of people who were different, just like the current Republican administration does with immigrants. And you'd be accurate. But you could also just as easily look at it from a different point of view and say that Hitler attacked the Jews because they were the wealthy people in Germany, and compare it to the scapegoating of rich people the previous Democrat administration loved to do. And you'd be accurate there as well. My point is not that either the current or previous president are neo-Hitlers, but that both parties partake in this sick divisiveness. Their hunger for votes relies on us falling for it, believing and embracing the propaganda, acting on it with our vote. They both offer up scapegoats so you don't see their collectivist traps hidden in their ideals. It doesn't matter which party wins. We all lose. Or perhaps, with so many people entrenched in the socialist ideal, we've already lost. I mean, the World War II generation, who went to war against National Socialism, is gone. The baby boomers are all in on the New Deal propaganda. The millennials think they can wave their fist in the air and tell everybody else how to live. I'll talk more about it in the next few months, but the odds are so heavily stacked against freedom that seems like we've already lost. Even at my most optimistic, I'd have to say we have a fainting glimmer of hope. If this were chess, we'd be in check. If this were baseball, we'd be 5 runs down with 2 outs in the bottom of the 9th. If this were the NFL, we'd be down by 8 with 1 second left on the clock and the ball on our own 1-yard line. Government has been allowed into so much of our daily lives. The idea of freedom in this country, true freedom to live your life how you see fit, is all but dead. And that, again, is looking at it from the most optimistic point of view I can see right now. They've won. The enemies of freedom have won. The collectivists that I've gone on about for the last 100 episodes have fully taken over. Freedom, the way it should be, is over for the foreseeable future. The United States of America is no longer a country that believes in the freedom for its citizens to exercise all of their natural rights. We have the Republican side who says, vote for us and we'll champion these rights for you, but those rights the Democrats champion? Oh, you can't have those. Then we have the Democrats who come over and say, hey, vote for us and we'll let you have our rights, but those Republican rights? No, no, you can't have those. All we do is vote periodically to see which hegemony gets to control our lives for a while. We had 8 years of the socialist hegemony. Now we're in year two of the imperialist hegemony. Either way, the end game is fascism. Collectivism. Could a miracle happen? Could a wave of libertarian awakening wash over the nation? Could the slumbering sheep realize they've fallen for the collectivist schemes? Sure. Will it? I'm not going to hold my breath. So I've decided I need to have some more fun. This is still a political podcast, but I just don't want to talk about Trump. How his opposition reacts to him. How his supporters react to the opposition. Less than 2 years into it, and I am already sick of all of that bullshit. I'm sick of their smarmy pettiness. I'm sick of their hyperbolic proclamations. Don't get me wrong. When a current political topic captures my attention, and I want to talk about it, I will. But I want to mix in things that bring a smile to my face. Things that make me happy and excited. Things that can take my mind away from the idiocracy. And if those things inspire a little political commentary, so be it. For instance, you recall when I reviewed Batman vs. Superman, I took a few moments at the end to comment on the political overtones. Something like that. In fact, there's a comic book movie that I'm thinking about right now that I think would be awesome to look at from a political point of view. On occasion, when I really need to get away from politics, I will do something completely different. I'm thinking maybe 2 to 4 times a year. As a reminder to myself that sometimes you just gotta take a mental vacation. I've done a few podcasts on recent DC movies. I may just go back and look at my favorite movies, comic book or otherwise. Maybe I'll talk about some of my travels around the continent. Regardless, when the situation warrants it, I'll still interject politics into the matter. In fact, something happened recently that just might make me change my plans for next month's topic. You just never know. So, fasten your seatbelts. Or don't. You do what you want. I'm a libertarian. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.